This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wang Shanning. It is 7:36 in the morning, Wednesday the 6th of November. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill, where Shanning, you'll be speaking with Tan Chow Yin, partner at Diamond Asia Private Equity.
Yeah, private equity investments have grown a lot in the last few years, and it's actually no longer the quiet cousin of the investment world. But, you know, the question is there too much dry powder chasing too few deals recently? So I'm going to speak to Tan Chow Yin of Diamond Private Equity about the local private equity landscape, the recent deal flow, and of course, the all-important exit.
Interesting stuff, and that's going to be happening after the 8 o'clock news. Be sure to stay tuned for that. In the meantime, taking a look at what's been making the news on the international front, India has decided to opt out of the China-backed Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP. Now, initially, these 16 nations involved were aiming to reach a significant conclusion in Bangkok over the weekend, but India did end up stalling progress with its last-minute change of mind.
So at the moment, the 15 remaining nations have pledged to continue with the process and expect to conclude the agreement by 2020.
So for some analysis on what this means for the remaining members of RCEP, we speak this morning to Calvin Cheng, Research Fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, Malaysia. Thank you for joining us, Calvin. Now, are you surprised by India's reversal, given that they have been part of negotiations for the past 7 years?
Well, I was a little surprised, but I think there's different perspectives. And one is that India, you know, has for years sort of always been on the fence and has always sort of been hesitant. And the second is that, you know, it's not uncommon for countries to suddenly reverse their positions or to take a hard line as a negotiating tactic, right? So we've seen various countries do this before in other trade agreements, like in the TPP a few years ago. But you know what's interesting is that in the statement released by the ASEAN Secretary, it mentioned that members will work closely with India to resolve these outstanding issues in a mutually satisfactory way. And from the Indian side, while, you know, Prime Minister Modi has sort of said some stuff about pulling out, to my knowledge, there has been no official statement from India on this yet. And so I think it would be a mistake to completely cross off the possibility of India coming back, you know, on board before RCEP is signed next year. Because the other thing to remember is that RCEP is not yet complete, right? So we're not out of the woods yet. There are still things to address. And all signs point that it will be signed next year in 2020 in Vietnam.
So how does this impact the effectiveness or benefits of RCEP for the remaining countries?
RCEP 15, so RCEP excluding India, is still a very large trade deal, right? So it's probably still the largest ever in GDP terms. I estimate close to about 28% of world GDP. And of course, reducing this size will have some adverse effects on the benefits of RCEP to member countries. But size, or rather coverage, is one thing. You know, the other aspects to trade agreements, such as scope, right? So when we talk about scopes, are there other provisions that address non-trade issues like labor, like the environment, as there is in CPTPP? And there's also the other thing, which is depth, right? So how deep do these commitments go? So I think one question is, if India has really pulled out, as you say, can the remaining countries go even further now and go even deeper now and achieve a higher quality trade agreement without India? But I think we also need to look beyond direct, tangible benefits, right? So there are other more indirect benefits too. So one thing, especially with the backdrop of the U.S.-China trade war, and in my opinion, in my view, is that these trade agreements reduce policy uncertainty, reduces the trade uncertainty, and shows that we can, in ASEAN, improve regional integration.
Now, RCEP, of course, was envisioned by China as an alternative to the now-defunct Trans-Pacific Partnership. And with the exit of the US, it has taken its new incarnation called the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership, or CPTPP. So how does RCEP differ from CPTPP in terms of content and impact for the countries involved?
So for one, the RCEP has a larger size, both in terms of the number of countries, in terms of the GDP share of these countries, right? And the second is that the RCEP is ASEAN-led and includes some lesser developed countries in ASEAN, like Cambodia, Laos, like Myanmar. versus the CPTPP, which only includes 11, which are mostly middle and high income economies. And the other thing besides size is, like I said, scope, right? So CPTPP is a high quality trade agreement that includes deep commitments in goods and services liberalization, but also many provisions that go beyond just trade in goods and services. So like I said, it's like issues like labor, environment. And I guess one very simplified way of thinking about this is that the CPTPP is smaller but more high quality, while the RCEP is larger but somewhat more shallow with weaker commitments by member countries. And I think based on rough simulations in terms of impacts to GDP, just from the sheer size, RCEP is estimated to have larger short to medium term impacts even without India. And also due to the fact that RCEP countries are generally lesser developed, so that means there's more room to run. But on the other hand, the more open nature of CPTPP in terms of future membership, and in addition to the high quality and deep commitments made by CPTPP signatories, I think this may bring even greater benefits in the long run.
Thank you so much, Calvin. And that was Calvin Cheng, Research Fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies in Malaysia. Now, the question is, you know, really at the end of the day, why is it that India decided to pull out? I think this was quite expected by a lot of people who have been watching the recent kind of back and forth between India and the rest of the RCEP countries. So Indian leaders cited economic concerns as well as national interests as the main rationale for their withdrawal. Some of the main concerns raised by those in India who are opposed to RCEP include the fact that that India actually has a $105 billion trade deficit with RCEP members as of 2019. I think China accounts for half of that amount alone. So there is this concern that RCEP would lead to more imports and therefore worsen that existing deficit.
Yeah, India is actually a major importing country because they have to fulfill the many of the needs of their locals without having the ability to produce them. So one would have thought that a trade agreement would benefit them because it would bring down the prices of imports. But India is also in the nascent state or stage of starting a lot of their own industry. So I think a lot of people don't want to say this, but of course, you've got to make concessions for a developing nation like India to develop their own industries in the form of some degree of protectionism.
But that's the thing India has been suffering from. This protectionism is notoriously difficult. I mean, just look at almost every single big Malaysian company that's gone into India. They've come back with the tail between their legs. It's notoriously bureaucratic. Protectionism is the key word. It's hard to make money. And I mean, now their excuse is that if they did join this RCEP, that the country would be flooded by cheap Chinese goods and also just goods from all these other 15 nations. That was one of their main concerns.
And of course, whenever you talk about within a government removing existing protectionist policies, it's never a very popular move, right? But governments tend to go forward with it anyway because of the longer term view that they want to be competitive on an international stage. But in the short term, it does hurt the wallets of their people. And the fact is that Narendra Modi is under a lot of domestic political pressure right now at home because they suffered quite a lot in their state elections last month. They lost support in the Maharashtra as well as the Haryana regions. And Indonesia is also in the midst of 5 consecutive quarters of slowing growth. So it has lost its status as the fastest growing major economy now to China. And high unemployment rates are also not helping matters. So it's Narendra Modi is fighting a battle on many fronts at home. I'm sure that this RCEP is just another, it's one of those things that, you know, it's just another battleground that you no longer have the resources to fight.
Yeah, it's also maybe good for his publicity, if you ask me. You know, he does like to come across as man against the rest of the world. And yeah, this not signing shows that he's his own man.
All right, and right now, though, we are heading into a few messages and then we'll be back to take a look at some local stories for you. So keep it here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.